back to part two with Nathaniel Rogers. That's myself from The Film Experience, Joe Reed from Lower Resolution, Nick Davis from Next Flick Picks, and Katie Rich from Cinema Blend. Where were we? Oh, yes, 127 hours. Enjoy.
Yeah, I can't really figure out what the... I mean, maybe people don't want to see it because of the arm thing, or they think it's like Danny Boyle already won, or it's too like flashy and youthful. I really loved 127 Hours.
I think a lot of people didn't want to see it because of the arm thing, and that really sort of... That's
just so weird because people just love violence in movies.
Right, that's the thing, yeah.
And yet people don't want to see 127 Hours.
Well, I think some of it is just sort of... It's that extreme violent... gross graphicness in the midst of a movie that isn't. And I think that was probably where Blue Valentine saw its problem, is that if you put that scene in the midst of a movie that was all about sex, you would have less of a problem with that than in something like Blue Valentine, where it sort of stands out among the sort of quiet relationship-y drama. I think that whole thing was overblown anyway, but...
Yeah, and in both movies, it's like it's so personal by the time you get to it. Like in Blue Valentine, that scene comes really late in the movie, and it means so much.
Yeah.
And then in 127 Hours, you've just gone through all him flashing back to his family, and seeing you feel very emotionally connected to him, and then he cuts off his arm, and it's insane.
But should movies really be punished for being successful at getting us caring about the characters, you know?
Oh, of course.
Of course not.
Absolutely not, yeah.
But it seems like that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Well...
In all those cases, people not wanting to see it because it's too upsetting because they care about a character. But mindless violence that you never have to think about someone dying is great.
Yep.
I think they're at home thinking like, oh, I bet I'll go to that and I'll really care about him. And then it'll be hard when I watch his arm get cut off. I think they're just like, I don't want to watch somebody cut his arm off.
Right.
I mean, I watched the movie on a screener with my family, and my mom and sister both left the room and like waited for us to give them the all clear.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's the best way to watch it if you're going to be squeamish. Just, like, walk out of the room, have someone be a spotter.
I mean, I didn't see that part. I closed my eyes, I'm going to admit.
I've never watched the whole thing. I've seen it a couple times.
So if I wore that T-shirt, I'd be a dirty liar.
But I think it's also that, you know, it's you can see somebody's arm could get cut off in a movie, and it's sort of comes out of nowhere, and it is amidst all this other violence, so you don't really hear about it. So all of a sudden, you're already in the theater. And it happens, and you get freaked out, and then by the end of the movie, you've forgotten about it. In this one,
well, and it is the movie in a way.
Yeah,
it has nothing else to. I'm not saying the movie doesn't have anything else to offer, but in terms of a pitch or an ad campaign, like they,
it's the hook. Yeah,
I also think that was a strange movie not to just go wide with really early.
They never expanded it. They had all these plans, and then it just didn't wind up going to a lot of places.
Well, yeah, that should have been a wide one right off the bat.
Yeah.
While we're talking about 127 Hours, do we have any thoughts on Franco as host slash nominee?
Well, I don't really have a thought about that, but other than a question, like, how did he go? I'm genuinely curious about this. How did he go from an actor that everybody thought was sort of cute and, you know, reasonably okay, but nobody cared about deeply, to, like, this massive ubiquitous celebrity that everybody's interested in?
He slept with George Clooney. That's how everybody did.
No, but I mean, think about how long he's been in movies and suddenly everybody loves him.
I mean,
usually there's like there's like a breakthrough role, or it's just weird to me. Like, I like him, but I like don't really get how he sort of sidestepped all the normal ways where people become like a massive ubiquitous celebrity.
I don't think that's necessarily true, though. I think he's the kind of actor who, once you've seen him in something, you tend to really love him after that. And he just wasn't... He had sort of been building these little pockets of people who had seen him in things. It was the people who saw him in Freaks and Geeks, which wasn't a lot of people, but it was some people. And then it was the people who saw him in the James Dean movie. And I think by the time he hit Pineapple Express...
And then Milk in the same year, which is, I think, is a really key part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
And I think that exposed him. All of a sudden now, everybody had seen him. Everybody now loves him. And then on the heels of that, this year and a half of taking any and all weird little projects. I don't know. I think it's just sort of an accumulation of thing upon thing upon thing.
So he's kind of like an avalanche celebrity.
Yeah, and I think he's just incredibly likable. And I think once enough people had seen him.
Just think about when he spent all those years in the Spider-Man movies and how depressing that was. And how
Well, see, that's the thing, though, as I think about the Spider-Man movies, and they certainly didn't do Kirsten Dunst any favor other than Kirsten Dunst's bank account. And so, like, when he was in those, nobody cared about him in those movies.
You know, aside from sleeping with George Clooney, there is the thing of, like, doing... I think you get a lot of credit when you actually come out and say, I was really bad in those movies and didn't care about them, right? The, like, the sort of Batman, one fine day, Peacemaker part of George Clooney, and once he started to get serious about, you know, I actually want to make art, like, the respect for that was huge, and I think the same thing kind of happened for James Franco. Like, it was pretty clear he had a mission to not have the career that he seemed like he was about to have.
Yeah, well, and I think those Spider-Man roles for him, he's easy enough to forget that he was even in those once you've seen him in enough other things. Like, when you mentioned that, I was just like, oh, yeah, he was in all three of those movies and he was pretty bad. But it was like, if you gave me a list of 20 things to list that I've seen James Franco in, including TV and internet stuff, no Spider-Man movie would make that list.
You would list the video with his grandma before you think
of
Spider-Man?
I would, yeah. Like, it just never crosses my mind. And that, maybe that's another, you know, one of his superpowers is he's able to make people forget
I think he also beats him to the punch. I think he says, I was bad in that before you even remember he was in.
All right.
I think we've settled that.
I'm glad we just settled the James Franco question.
I guess we're all saying it's 127 hours that's going to be the one of the 11 that doesn't make it in?
My pick right now.
Are there 11? I don't know.
There seem to be 11.
Okay.
With 11 movies in the running for Best Picture, which is kind of sad that even with 10, it's so predictable.
Can you run down the 11?
Social Network, King's Speech, Inception, The Fighter, Black Swan, Toy Story 3, Winter's Bone, True Grit, The Kids Are All Right, 127 Hours, and The Town.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't be shocked if True Grit didn't make it.
It's such a hit, though. It's going to be the first Coen movies to make over 100 million.
And, I mean...
At least it's not going to be Shutter Goddamn Island. I'll
I kind of wonder if we could have, like, a total surprise, though.
This is only our second year of the 10. We still don't know what little quirks could show up and just what kinds of pockets of support could lead to a movie getting that sort of 9th or 10th slot.
Because I'm still kind of curious if Oscar is going to go for another year in a much bigger way than people are expecting. They have responded to Mike Lee more than the public does, you know?
Yeah.
And because people who see it seem to really love it. So, and then the Ghostwriter, because they also are big Polanski fans.
You know? Oh, yeah.
The Ghostwriter has stuck around longer than I ever expected it to. Like, it showed up, when my critics group did voting, it kept showing up for everything. Weren't we talking about Desplat maybe getting the score nomination for that?
I'm currently predicting he gets 2 score nominations.
I'd love to talk about score. I know we were going to do a below the line at some point.
Follow us below the line.
So the first thing is let's be mean-spirited for a second.
Okay.
Which single nomination below the line? This is so mean. These people work so hard and nobody knows who they are.
But continue.
Would you block if you could? Like, I'm sorry, you just cannot be nominated.
Natalie Portman.
No.
For her work in costume design.
Shit.
There you go, Nick. You did it.
Oh, we've been avoiding her for so long.
So we're the only people. Would I block?
God, any of the below the line Alice in Wonderland nominations. And I know, Nat, I'm probably stealing your thunder there. But, like...
No, but pick one. Like, something that bugs
Art
you
direction.
That you think is going to get nominated.
Art Direction. That is an ugly looking movie. And not even ugly in an interesting way. That's the thing. Like, I think maybe part of it was that Burton thought he was crafting this kind of intriguingly dingy Wonderland. And it's just like, no, it just looks gray and ugly. I can't support that. Sorry, good and talented people who actually did the Art Direction. I'm sure you did wonderful on other things.
I'm going to look at costume things.
Costume's a weird category this year.
Well, you're the expert on costume. Is there anything in there that's weird that we should be...
Is there any Elizabeth Turn Off the Dark nominations? Can we retroactively make that the title of that movie, by the way?
At least a few more things need to be called something Turn Off the Dark.
That'll be the new Electric Boogaloo. I'm kind of...
So costume design, I think that could have a surprise nomination because nothing seems locked up other than The King's Speech, Alice in Wonderland. And True Grit, maybe. The interesting thing about True Grit with costume design is Mary Zofries, who did the design. She always works with the Coens, and they've never nominated her. And she does tons of good work in movies.
But the Coens are never known for their costumes.
Yeah, but they do period pieces, and she's never nominated. So I don't know. Maybe a Western will solve that. I don't know.
Yeah, that fringe. It's all in the fringe.
Is there any movie that has, like, that one outfit? Like, remember how Atonement got nominated basically because of that wonderful dress that Keira Knightley wore? Like, is there any movie that has one sort of great statement?
That dress Marion Cotillard wears in Inception? I'd do that.
Oh.
Inception would be a great costume nominee. I don't know if anyone sees it happening.
Yes, I agree.
Well, The King's Speech is going to get nominated for how good they made everybody look in suits. Like, Inception did the same thing. That once they hit that level where Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Ellen Page are both in those sort of gray business-y, like, I thought they looked fantastic.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing that fight wearing that vest.
Yes.
It's really fantastic.
That's good call there. I like that.
No, I like the costumes in that movie too, but I, except for Ellen Page.
Yeah.
I don't like the costume.
You're not
work
into
on
the
her.
Neckerchiefs.
You know, in terms of one costume doing it, I kind of think Black Swan's going to get nominated.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
When I first predicted that, people were like, "You're so crazy. That's contemporary. Nobody's going to go for that." But I was thinking of the, I knew it would have performative elements. This is before any of us saw it, you know. I knew there would be ballet performances, and I'm like, they'll have tons of costumes.
Yeah, all the Swan costumes you think will get it in?
Yeah, but I mean, if I could block a costume nomination, I'm really hoping against, for the first time in my life, Sandy Powell. Just like the Tempest costume just seemed to me yet another situation like Alice in Wonderland where, like, the direction is just like, go crazy.
In the Tempest?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like all the stuff that Helen Mirren is wearing is like, it doesn't look good. It doesn't make any sense. You don't really know what she's wearing or why.
There's not any even coherency between one look to the next. Like, so in this outfit she's wearing, what was that, like a fish coat or something?
I think it's a glass.
Or glass. Like, I didn't even understand what it was. And then the next time she's just in like this super tight black corset. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me other than that it was showy.
Wait, can we talk about score again? I totally caused this derail.
I feel like Nick's being super quiet, though.
I haven't seen any costume movies, really. I've just been trying. Made in Dagenham, that might be its one shot, maybe. The clothes in that are kind of great.
I love the clothes in that, but I worry that they won't even watch it.
I was just going to say that red dress, that's a plot point.
Yeah. Do you think if Ree Dolly had worn the Atonement dress, what she... I could have gotten it in.
I think we...
I want a nomination for Dale Dickey's Trapper Hat.
Yes.
Very cool.
True. Can I be the only one rooting for Burlesque to get the costume nomination so that when they do the best costume sort of mini fashion show at the Oscars that someone walks out wearing nothing but the bag of Famous Amos cookies across the stage?
Excellent.
If that counts as costume design, just give them the Oscar.
It sure damn well does.
I think that's what James Franco should wear when Anne Hathaway inevitably wears the black Bjork dress.
Truth. That's such a good idea.
Oh, we should explain this. The listeners won't know.
It doesn't need explaining. You guys, Anne Hathaway is going to wear a black version of the Bjork dress. That will be a gag. I want $10 from everybody if that happens.
And another $10 if Emma Stone hosts the SciTech Awards, as you also predicted.
Well, I think I only asked for $5 for that, so you know I'm a kind leader.
Oh, have they not announced the science and tech? They haven't announced that yet?
No, it's my favorite thing to predict.
I'm going to still hold out for Mila Kunis, but I think
I was going to say Mia Wasikowska.
Or Blake Lively, right?
Blake Lively.
We've each got a horse now. Okay, so now we're all going to wait with bated breath to see who gets nominated. I feel like
everyone else's choices are good, too.
I know.
It's so the best hard. Original score.
All right. So everything that's interesting is ineligible, right?
Yeah, basically.
As per usual, yeah.
Except for The Social Network.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to get nominated.
Do we think it can win, though?
No.
It can't win, right?
No, but I think it will get nominated.
I would be so surprised. I mean, I would be happy, but I would be so surprised.
Well, that Hurt Locker nomination last year was amazing. And
it was, yeah.
It seems like a similar cadre of voters would go for this.
Well, and weirdly, and I know this is going to
make... But then why haven't they before last year?
Because they were all born last year.
Well, do we... I mean, is anyone else interested in seeing Inception win? Because I do... I mean, that the level to which that score is iconic, I think, is impressive.
Right, and but I know, hey, can just... we clear something up about Inception right now, though? I also like that score quite a lot, even though the movie's so loud. I keep reading that the score is Edith Piaf just played super, super slow. That's so if that's the case, then why does he not get declared ineligible like all the other people who are using it?
I think it's like a main melodic line. It's not like the song is playing.
Yeah, and I think it's just like mimicking the beat of it, like the beat of Edith Piaf slowed down, but it's not the actual track, I think.
Right.
It's just that it's the trumpets from the beginning of the song slowed way down, but it's not the whole song. Like, it's not a Pink Floyd dorm room experience where you're just, what if we played this really slow?
Okay. No, it's just that I keep reading that, and of course, the King's Speech famously was a Beethoven or something as the climax. And, like, those aren't declared ineligible, but, you know, Carter Burwell is because he uses too many Protestant hymns.
Right.
Which is such nonsense.
It is.
Well, it is, and it's arbitrary.
It's a clear, cohesive vision for the score, and he's, like, the guy deciding it.
Yeah, and you know Carter Burwell sits there and is like, well, no Oscar for this. It's going to be a better movie for it. Doing it. The same thing with Clint Mansell, too. Like, deciding not to just use Tchaikovsky in the ballet scenes, but to incorporate it into the rest of the score.
Right.
Like, they knew that they were making themselves ineligible, and they went for it anyway.
They picked their art.
Well, what do we think about Daft Punk getting in there for Tron Legacy? It is the only thing anybody likes about the movie.
I think that would be as surprising as Hilary Swank getting a Best Actress nomination.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I think it would be amazing.
I'm not trying to bag on the internet. I love the internet. I live on the internet. But it just seems to me like some of those things, like the Daft Punk thing, are just like internet chatter.
Yeah.
And people start, for some reason, believing them as like Oscar chatter.
Yeah, it would be a different story if Tron Legacy was going to show up in a whole lot of other different categories. I do think the score category is going to be one of those places that some movie pops up that doesn't pop up anywhere else. And I wonder if it might not be something like Let Me In. Because now that they've nominated Michael Giacchino, he could be he's now in the club.
Oh, right.
Rachel Portman did Never Let Me Go.
Right.
I think she'll be in, even though I think that score is all wrong for the movie.
And I feel that way about Michael Giacchino and Let Me In. And I love Michael Giacchino and really liked the movie, but that score drove me crazy.
But when has overscored ever equaled not up Oscar's alley? Like,
man, I watched Saving Private Ryan last night. You want to talk overscored?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it in like 15 years.
But that's what they go for, and that's what gets remembered.
Big
scores. Like, you're not going to remember something that's small and, you know, contributes. And I mean,
so that Hurt Locker thing is so bizarre still.
Also, why is
127 hours, speaking of disqualifications, why is 127 hours not disqualified? Doesn't it like filled with songs?
Yeah, it really is.
If that's what you want to call them.
I have a feeling it's going to be Inception. It's going to be the two Desplat. It's going to be Never Let Me Go. Well, no, I think it's going to be Alice in Wonderland, and then either Never Let Me Go or The Social Network or Let Me In.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon is a great score.
I think it's a great score, too. I just don't see it getting remembered in categories other than Best Animated Film.
I really love Tangled, too. It's in for original song, but only one song, which kind of bums me out because it's got really good songs.
We're stumped. The original score has ground this podcast to a halt.
What should we do for our finale really quick? Okay, Benning versus Portman. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God, no. That's a whole podcast unto itself.
Oh, should we end with director? We didn't talk about director.
I think Deborah Gronick is in.
Yeah?
I keep reading that Martin Scorsese is telling everybody it's the best directed movie of the year. And
oh, wow, that's quite the endorsement. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and he's been sending people copies of Down to the Bone and Winter's Bone.
Interesting.
And like that movie's doing so well and seems to specifically appeal to filmmakers. So if there's a fifth slot person, I've admitted many times I'm bad at predicting, but I have a hunch about her.
I can't even figure out who is in the, like, who would be in the four. Like, I keep going back and forth on David O. Russell, on the Coens, on Aronofsky, and Christopher Nolan. Like, I can't figure out how they all fit in.
I think Fincher, Nolan, and Aronofsky are safe. But
what about Tom Hooper?
I think he's probably going to get nominated, but if there's a major snub, it'll be him. And snub only in the sense of people expect it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't David O. Russell be a snub if he didn't? I mean, because The Fighter is going so well and people really like it.
But I don't know. You still got Danny Boyle. Do we think his chances are over?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
The Coen brothers, Mike Lee, Roman Polanski. I mean, there could be other surprises.
I wouldn't be shocked to see Christopher Nolan get not nominated just because I think Inception's had its thunder so thoroughly stolen by movies like The Social Network. Fincher and Aronofsky sort of take the Christopher Nolan slots, don't they? Like
if the we're hip talking young slots.
The hip director. Young directors.
Yeah.
I love that all the hip young directors are all in their 40s.
Yeah.
But I mean, it takes a while for director careers to get going.
Nominated for Best Actors, they would be the, like, dowagers.
I really want to see Christopher Nolan get nominated, just because the accomplishment of Inception as such a big, expensive, good movie, I really value it being in the top 10 for the year in terms of box office and all that.
Yeah. Plus, the internet could finally shut up about...
Yeah, I don't want to have to go through that if he gets snubbed this year.
And we can expand the field to 20 nominees next year.
And on that note...
well, it's the Avatar's closing up on HBO right now, so maybe that is a sign that we should...
Wow. So we've been talking the length of Avatar?
No, it is still going, but the ashes of Home Tree are falling, so we're going...
It's hard to be releasing. It's the hour-long cut.
I feel like we should recite the Cher lyrics before we go.
Are there lyrics for less? You haven't seen The Last of Me?
There are.
Would you like to recite them for us?
I'm just going to spell out burlesque in the background.
Maybe next time.
Spoiler, we love burlesque.
Yeah, I think all of us did, right? I don't know about Katie.
Katie, did you love burlesque?
I didn't see it.
That's what the sirens were for.
I know. I just didn't. I couldn't get to the press screening, and then I went home for Thanksgiving, and then it just disappeared, and I missed it entirely.
I saw it over my Thanksgiving trip.
You love burlesque more than your family.
I do, well.
His family all went.
I tried. I really did try to get a family screening of burlesque going, but. Hard sell.
Okay, well, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm so glad to be back with the podcast.
I know. Do we think is there a shot of us doing this again before the season's over?
If this one records.
All right, well, let's be optimistic and say we will do it again.
I would love to do it again.
You haven't seen The Last of Us yet.
That's right.
There we go. How to Train Your Podcast. This is far from over. You haven't seen the last of me. There will